Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John Stamey, and it's wonderful to be here with everyone today. First of all, I want to say hello to my co-host, Matthew Delf, from somewhere between Tennessee and Kentucky, most likely southwestern Virginia. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, wonderful. Glad to be on here, as always.
Yeah, we're always glad to have you and get to complain to you and everything, because what else can we do? Matt's more fun to complain to than anyone I've ever met, folks, so what can I say? First of all, I've got some shout-outs and some announcements. First of all, thanks to – I was at the South Carolina Comic-Con this weekend promoting the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and those folks are the nicest people in the world. They had about 35,000 people there. Everybody's excited about Bigfoot. I'm going to tell you that. Georgia Bigfoot Conference, April the 27th, Clayton, Georgia, at the Rabun County Civic Center, number one. The Cherokee Legends Comic-Con, finally we can announce that. That is going to be August the 24th and 25th, and on August the 25th up there in Cherokee, Matthew Delf will be doing Bigfoot hunting and exploration in those beautiful mountains in Cherokee County, North Carolina. I mean, it just can't get any more fun. Now, I want to thank our new friend, Atlanta Expatriate Magazine, who shared our event, has been talking about us. Atlanta Expat Magazine and Caroline, you folks are so wonderful. Everybody go there, support them. They're going to be working with us on an event here coming up soon. So thanks to Atlanta Expat Magazine, for great people. And check them out and say hello on behalf of us. Now, we got events coming up. First of all, March the 16th, Matt Delf and I and Angelia Shear will be at Exploration Bigfoot in Cherry Log, Georgia, because our buddy Lyle Blackburn will be there talking about his brand new book, Momo, The Curious Story of the Missouri Monster. And we just had Lyle on Scarycast this past Thursday night. It was a blast. Had a lot of our friends call in, had a great time. So please join us all in Cherry Log, Georgia, this Saturday, March the 16th, as we listen and hang out with Lyle Blackburn. We'll hang out with him from like 1 to 4, and then he talks at 6 o'clock. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Then March the 29th, come to the Rabun County Public Library for Library After Dark. I will be talking about Bigfoot and Georgia Bigfoot, along with Marshall Masters, who's the king of Planet X and survivalism, and William Rodriguez will be talking about a lot of cool stuff, a lot of paranormal stuff that goes on in Rabun County, Georgia. So do not miss that. It'll be a Facebook Live if you can't be there. So we just got a lot of great things coming up. March the 16th, Cherry Log, Georgia, that will be the Lyle Blackburn talk. March the 29th will be myself, Marshall Masters, and William Rodriguez at the Rabun County Public Library. And then, of course, coming up in April, the end of April, on the 27th, will be the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, Rabun County Civic Center, Clayton, Georgia. So we got a lot of great things coming on. And Matt, now that the weather has broken, are you able to get out and go hang out with Bigfoot finally?
I will be. I definitely will be. From here till probably as much as I can get in all summer and all spring. And, well, I do a little mushroom hunting, too, in between there. So I'll be doing some Bigfoot hunting and some mushroom hunting this spring. But I like to call it Bigfooting, but I'm looking for mushrooms too. But if you've ever had
all right,
great,
well, we're just glad you're gonna be able to get back out and bring us some more news from the forest. And it's gonna be great. So thanks a lot. Glad you're here. Now today we've got a very special guest. I had him on my show, Scarycast, a couple of weeks ago. He does two things. He wears two hats. First of all, he is a paranormal investigator, and he's got a show on Amazon Prime. Second of all, he is a well-known Bigfoot hunter, in the western part of Kentucky. I want everybody to get a great big welcome out for Thomas Markham. Thomas, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, that's good. I know you wear two hats. Along with a full-time job, you do paranormal research and you do Bigfoot exploration. So first of all, tell us about your Bigfoot exploration. That's why we're here on Bigfoot and Company. People are excited about you being on here. And tell us kind of some of the things that you do, some of the things that you've done. And, of course, our expert Bigfoot explorer, Matt Delph, will be talking with you as well. So what are you doing these days hanging out with Bigfoot, buddy?
Well, I've been researching Bigfoot for well over 20 years, and other anomalies too. Everything from if it's weird, I like it. If it's UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, history, things like that. If it's weird, I like it. So I've been hunting Bigfoot real heavy for the last 8 or 10 years, and I've had numerous encounters and. I've taken in numerous reports from witnesses and found things that are just kind of amazing, really.
I like that word, amazing. I call it wonderful because Bigfoot's there. Bigfoot's really cool. Bigfoot knows us. Bigfoot knows who we are, where we are, and Bigfoot just quietly stays in the background, wanting to mind to him and herself and just do what they do. Do you agree with that, Thomas?
For the most part, yes, they do. They just kind of, they are curious about us, and they do kind of keep an eye on us, but most of the time they're back away where you don't know it.
Well, I certainly agree. And I want to ask you a question, because this is something that I don't really ask a lot of people, but I feel comfortable about asking you. I feel like I was in the woods, in the forest in Rabun County, Georgia. And I just had the feeling that a bunch of Bigfoot people, I'm going to call them people because they're people, I just had this feeling they were looking at me. I could feel it. And it was a friendly feeling. Am I correct? Now, what I think is that if you have no malice toward them, and if you want to live and let live, they're going to like you. What do you think about that?
Well, the feeling you're describing is something that I've encountered myself, and it's something that I have talked to numerous hundreds of witnesses who feel the same way. And I think for the most part, Bigfoot is non-aggressive. If you're not in there causing any trouble, if you're not getting too close to young ones or infants, you're not going to have a problem. But Bigfoot also is a lot like us in that every person is kind of got a different temperance. So you may run into one that's a little more aggressive, but for the most part, you won't. Most of them are pretty easy going. From what I've experienced, I've been in real close proximity to Bigfoot and without any kind of issues as far as them being aggressive toward me. But I have taken in reports where they have been aggressive and thrown big rocks at people and things like that.
Well, you got to do what you got to do. Matt, what do you think about that?
I still got a bone to pick with one that I encountered, but
that's some dude up in Indiana, right?
Yeah. He's pretty aggressive. I think they're more like kind of like the primate instinct. You know, the chimpanzee can be around it, and all of a sudden, just one day, it just got big mood swing, and like that one in the news that a lot of primates actually are like that. They got an aggressive side to them also, and I believe you catch them in the right mood or the right time, and they can rip you apart if they want. And I believe same way with Bigfoot, that it just depends on what they're curious about, what type of mood they're in, territory. They're just like any other animal, I believe. They make you you're at the bottom of the food chain whenever it comes to messing with them, I believe.
Okay. Now, that's interesting. You say we are at the bottom of the food chain. Now, what do you mean by that?
When they're more superior. I mean, if we didn't have the technology we have, I'm sure that they would, they could rip you apart if they want. They are more dominant physically, faster. We might be, I think we're a lot smarter, but they're not dumb either. They're intelligent, and they got animal instincts and like the sense of smell and hearing and eyesight. They're more enhanced physically than we are. We might got a little edge over them with the brain, but other than that, physically they could, that's why Stalin wanted, a military of primate and human, a hybrid. They're just physically more dominant. And they can get around the woods a lot better than we can. I mean, we definitely would, if we didn't have today's technology, we would definitely probably could get overtaken by them if wanted. Kind of like the whole Planet of the Apes theory.
Well, you probably are right on that. Thomas, is that about what you think, or do you have kind of a different opinion of that?
Well, no. If a Bigfoot decides to hurt you or whatever, there's not a whole lot we can do about it. I mean, for years I never did pack any kind of weaponry at all. I do pack a gun now, mostly for the bears and for the maybe some nefarious people you might run into. But if a Bigfoot wants to hurt you, it would have you before you even knew what happened. You couldn't overpower it. You couldn't get away from it.
They're bigger than we are. Well, and to some extent, because I've now heard some stories of the smaller form of Bigfoot, which is 3.5 feet tall. Jen Cruz brought that up a couple of times. First of all, first on ScaryCast, and then second on ScaryCast when Al Blackburn was there. Have either of you guys seen the smaller 3.5 foot version of Bigfoot?
I've not seen them, but I'm familiar somewhat with them. A good study on that is the Eskimo culture. They have a little people up there that's pretty fascinating if you kind of research that a little bit.
Well, now,
yeah,
when you mean the little people, yeah, what kind of little people are you talking about on that? I'm not familiar with what the Eskimo people have, but I'd like to know.
Well, it's basically, from what I've read, what I've not studied in depth, but what I've seen on it is that they're kind of like a Bigfoot, but they're just kind of smaller, and they can either do something to help you or they can be kind of mean. And it's a real big part of their culture.
Now, are we talking about the Eskimo primarily in Canada or primarily in Alaska, or is it both?
I would imagine it was both, but what I had read and seen was from the Alaska.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. I know it gets cold, but I know it gets cold up there, a lot.
Yeah.
So who knows where it is? Do what?
Not for me. I couldn't handle that cold, man.
Yeah.
Neither, I tell you what. Yeah, Matt, have you had any experience with those smaller Bigfoot?
No, I've never experienced any. Just from reports stuff, but with the little people stuff like that, I've heard stories, but that's about as far as it's come with the little people. I don't know a whole lot about them. I've heard stuff here and there, but no sightings or reports or anything like that, especially here recently or within the past 10, 15 years of anything like that happening. I mean, I'm sure there probably are reports out there, but I haven't looked into it.
That's the same here, too. I've not taken in any reports of little people here locally or anything like that. I mean, I've heard a few stories, but that's just old hand-me-down stuff from many, many years ago.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm not so familiar with them either.
Yeah, well, that'll be. Pardon me, Matt. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say that. I guess because I haven't had any reports of them, so I mean, I've never really looked into a whole lot of it, you know, just stories and stuff. But since I've never really had any reports, I've never really looked into it.
Well, that's the same with Dogman for me. I've had very few Dogman sightings in this general area. It's mostly Bigfoot or, you know, something like UFOs or something. But no, I've only had just a handful of Dogman sightings in this general area.
I had that one gentleman. I didn't get his name. You might know who I'm talking about there, Thomas, at the Harlan last year. He had a picture. He was showing around on his digital camera as an older gentleman and his wife, and they were showing it to him, and there were tracks, and he called this one Three Toes, and it was a totally different track than a Bigfoot track, and I explained to him that it wasn't a Bigfoot, and he said it had a snout, and I know, I'm sure you, the devil monkey, and it leaves a three-toed track, but what he had was totally different than a Bigfoot. Did you know the guy I'm talking about that was going around with his little digital camera?
Yeah, I heard about him, but I didn't actually get a chance to talk to him or see the picture. But now, here in my area, there was a three-toed track found just a few years back by some, actually from people who are kin to me, when they was out four-wheeling. They seen the creature, kind of just caught a glimpse of it go over the bank, and when they got up there, they seen the three-toed track. But it was raining hard that day and everything, so they didn't get no pictures or anything like that. It was just trying to get off the mountain.
I'm sorry. I want to ask, Matt, please keep your question. I've got a question for both of you about the three-toed track cryptid. Is that something that appears to be a Bigfoot, a hairy kind of thing? And I'm asking for a reason. From down in Lee County. Does that appear to be a Bigfoot with three toes, or is that something else with three toes? What do you think?
You want to go ahead, Matt, and answer that one?
Well, you can go first, and I can follow up. Okay. Or
yeah,
way.
I'd love both of you to answer that question.
Well, I actually have a track casting that came from Oregon of a four-toed track that is a Bigfoot track. It's a juvenile track, about 10, 11 inches long. And I take it to the shows when I go to the Comic-Con and things like that. And there have been some reports of three-toed Bigfoot track. That, you know, it's flat, but it only has three toes. But the track, I think, that you're mostly referring to, and what Matthew was talking about, is more related to a Dogman track instead of a Bigfoot. So there's some variation between them, because a Bigfoot track, of course, is more flat, even regardless of how many toes it has, and then a Dogman is quite a bit different from that. Would be what I would suspect would be the culprit.
Well, the three-toed track, it's similar. It's a devil monkey. A devil monkey leaves a three-toed track. And through the 1930s up to the Appalachian Mountains, there was tons of sightings. And a lot of people, like a dog man, though, it'll leave like a canine track. The three-toed one, though, the devil monkey, a lot of people misidentify it as a dog man because it has a snout like a baboon, and it's not real tall. It gets in between like 4 to 6 foot tall if it stands on two legs. I know Pittsburgh, Tennessee, had a huge, huge problem with these things back in the 30s, and they actually sent groups out hunting them. But they're similar to like a dog man, and I think a lot of it's misidentified. They call it a dog or a dog man, but I think it's, I believe what everybody's seen is a devil monkey. They're super fast. They can stand on two legs. They can get down and run. They leave a three-toed track. Their face is similar to a baboon, and they have a tail. So I believe that's what I think the three toes. And like Thomas was talking about with the four toes and stuff like that, this track is a little bit different than a Bigfoot track, this three-toed track. And I think it's where they're up on the balls of their feet, and they're super fast, and they're terrorizing the area.
And that's just something we don't see a whole lot of in our area. That's just something we don't see a whole lot of.
And that man described it as he had a picture of something there and had a snout on a digital camera. He was real secretive about it. He was showing it to me, and he was making sure other people weren't looking. It's kind of weird, but
I talked to that gentleman on the phone because I was wanting to come up there. If I ain't mistaken, he told me it got into the back of his car one day in the back seat while it's parked. I don't know if it slept in it or whatever.
Yeah, he was. He described like when they were young, they had like a pig snout. So
I'm like you. He was very secretive and didn't. He wanted to tell you about it, but he didn't want you to come check it out.
Well, he offered for me to come check it out, but I was busy at the time. And he said he didn't want any other people. He said if it's just me, and he'd come up and he was going to exchange information, but I wasn't there at the current time. I was doing something. And my mom gave him my phone number. I wish she would have got his, but I don't ever answer calls.
I had his somewhere. I had his phone number somewhere, but I don't remember what I did with it. It's been probably a year or so now.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about what he's dealing with.
Watch me. I would have liked to have checked it out, but
I'm thinking it might be. I think a lot of this dog man stuff like that. A lot of it is this devil monkey.
It could be. It could be. Now, I know we got a dogman report there from Harlan, and it was at the railroad crossing. But, according to the witness, they got a real good look at it. You know, it was much larger and no tail and things like that. So, but definitely, that's something that both of those are something that we rarely have in this area.
I noticed
not. I might have a surprise for you, gentlemen. I am sitting here looking at a drawing of a three-toed footprint made by a fellow who's an attorney in the Johnson City, Bristol, Kingsport area. He's very careful about. He actually gave me his name, his number, and his wife's cell phone number as well. I can contact them. But he said he saw something that looked kind of like a little bit of a miniature lizard man with hair all over it. And he and his friends saw the three-toed track, and he drew it for me. And I am sitting here looking at it right now. And I am beginning. Yeah, they are. And I am beginning to wonder if there isn't another cryptid that's involved around here, that there is a lizard man. I mean, I can guarantee you it as much as I can guarantee the fact that we breathe oxygen. I can guarantee you there's a lizard man out there in Skateboard Swamp. But I can guarantee you that there is something else. There is something that's not a lizard man and not a Bigfoot, and it is a cryptid, and it wanders around, and it's got three toes. Now, that's what I believe. I've had too many people tell me this, and I'm sitting here looking at the drawing by this fellow who's he's actually a well-known attorney in one of those major cities in the Mountain Empire, Johnson City, Bristol, Kingsport. Don't want to kind of single him out because he's actually probably on several billboards. But he said that, I could talk to him, and I've spoken with him about it. But I'm beginning to think that there is a third entity out there that's quite
now
prevalent.
That sounds
the dogman.
That sounds like the tracks that were found in Hellier, Kentucky, which is just past Harlan a little ways over in Letcher County. I don't know if you've seen the series. It's on Amazon Prime about it. Now, it's a three-toed track. if you imagine a turtle that had its head out and its feet out and you stuck it upside down in the mud, that's kind of what the track looks like. And those are cryptids that are coming out, they say come out of the old caves and coal mines up there. And that sounds like the track you're describing.
Oh, wow.
Well, what I know is that it is not, you know, when you think of a Bigfoot track, you think of something that looks, that has a somewhat of a human look. You know, it's got approximately five toes. They each make an indentation. They're a little bit oval in shape, and then there's something that's like the sole of a foot. So, in my opinion, you know, when you think about Bigfoot tracks, you think about something that has a bit of a human look. Am I correct, Matt and Thomas?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, this thing does. This thing has more pointed toes and everything. So, I don't know, but we'll see as we do more exploration. And what I'll say is that I hope that, Thomas, that you can join us. You and Tony can both join us down at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference in Kingsport. And I would bet you that I can get us out to that area where I've got not only one but two reports of these tracks. So Thomas, you think you can join us that last weekend in October down in Kingsport and be one of our guest speakers?
I'm not 100% sure on that because I think my wife gets her vacation in and I'll probably be out of town.
Well, that's okay. We'll forgive you. We'll forgive you because it's your wife, okay?
Yeah. You don't make her mad.
No.
If mom ain't happy, nobody happy.
Or you could tell her that she's going to get to take a vacation to Kingsport, Tennessee. That may not work, but we can. You could always try, right?
That's right. But have
That's
you
right.
watched
well,
the series on Amazon called Hellier?
I've heard about it.
Have you, Matt?
No, I've heard about it, but I haven't watched it. I'm kind of curious about what he's talking about now.
Well, I actually covered the story a few years back. About that particular area where they'd found the tracks. And this guy actually moved out of his house. He was, if I remember the story correctly, he was a doctor in the town. He just had moved there and didn't stay a real long time because these creatures were coming around his house. And he had these pictures of these tracks and such. And he ended up moving away and leaving the house. But before he left, he actually contacted these researchers and they actually came to the town. The series is pretty good. It's like 8 or 9 episodes or something, maybe 10. And toward the end, it gets a little bit, they go off in some other direction maybe. But overall, it's real good.
That kind of leads me to
And that's not very far from us.
No, that kind of leads me to, Keith, what are your thoughts on Bigfoot? Are you, you know how we've got the woo side, the flesh and blood? I always use scientific approach, flesh and blood, but I mean, I keep an open mind. I've come across other things. But.
I keep an open mind about it, but in my 20-some-odd years of doing Bigfoot research, I've not had anything I thought was paranormal or woo in association with Bigfoot. Now, Bigfoot is reported to use infrasound, but we had no other animals actually use this as well, so that wouldn't be, while that's not paranormal, you know, this wouldn't be shocking if Bigfoot did it as well. But my thoughts is flesh and blood from what I've experienced, but I do keep an open mind about it just in case.
Yep, same here. It's kind of makes you wonder, like a fox can, so many feet under snow, they can detect a mouse. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, they can get that vibe straight down there. It's kind of makes you wonder, you know, like with a bat, you know, what Bigfoot's got some of these capabilities.
Right. Even though they're unusual, that don't mean they're paranormal or, you know, something.
Exactly.
It's just something we don't understand.
Exactly. Yep. Totally agree. That's like eye shine. That's one thing I've been looking into a lot here lately. On eye shine, everything has eye shine except for humans. Squirrels, I don't think, do. Pigs, I think kangaroos don't. but most of your animals all have eye shine, except for like I said, squirrels, pigs, kangaroos, humans, and 80% of primates, if not more, don't have eye shine. So it kind of makes you wonder, you know, where Bigfoot falls in this, because I've heard a lot of reports with eye shine on Bigfoot.
Well, yeah, to me, I've seen quite a few videos and heard people describe eye shine, and which has been an old time coon hunter. I've seen a lot of eye shine up in trees, coons and things like that. So I know it's easy to be fooled if you don't know what you're looking at. If you're kind of unfamiliar.
A lot of owls. I've seen a lot of pictures that people claim to be Bigfoot, but it's an owl eye shine. But I'm kind of curious, you know, if they're nocturnal animal, then I'm sure they're going to have some sort of eye shine. But where does that classify them at DNA-wise, you know? Because humans don't have it. And a very small portion of primates, your biggest majority of primates don't have eye shine. So it kind of makes you wonder if they do have eye shine, where do they fall in DNA-wise? And
yeah,
I don't know why. I'm sorry.
I said that's an interesting thought about that. I hadn't really thought about it in that much detail. Because, I do like to get out at night some for Bigfoot, but I mostly like to go daytime because if you go at night, a lot of times you'll miss a lot of things if you're not careful because it's dark, of course.
Very true. Very true.
I mean, unless you're the she squatchers, and the she squatchers can find things 24 hours a day, right, Matt?
Yeah. Yep. Definitely.
I'm sorry. I just had to interject that. Shout out, of course, to Jen, Jenna, and Tammy, the she squatchers. Shout out to them. They're great. Please continue, gentlemen. I was just being a fanboy.
It was glad you mentioned that because I went out with them, and we went during the day. And then later that night, we went back to the same location. And, we got something on the clear. Don't know what it is. It was covered in hair, though, because our hair was white on the clear, and this thing was covered with white, but can't really tell what it is. So, of course, you know, I'm not a person. I won't say it's Bigfoot unless I throw out everything that else is possible. But, we did pick up something. Don't know what it was, but we picked up something.
Well, you know, a lot of times people go out at night and they don't have a FLIR or anything like that. They just got a few lights and some recorders or something like that. And you're going to miss a lot if you're not, you know, unless you really have some kind of major activity or howls or something like that. You're going to miss a lot of possible tracks and structures and things like that.
Very true. That's why I try to go during the day. I've done nighttime. I've done a little bit of both. But you can see a lot better during the daytime and see, you know, what you're looking at. And you'll miss a lot. And if you don't believe in Bigfoot and you're out in the woods, you'll walk right past stuff that you have no clue was even Bigfoot related.
Yeah, that's for sure. I know people who, well, they're hunters. They've been hunting, you know, most of their life, and they say, well, I've never seen anything like, you know, like a Bigfoot or tracks or nothing. Well, if you don't really out there, if you're not out there looking and understand what you're looking for, you're not going to find it unless it's just, you know, totally obvious right in your face.
Exactly. That's my whole point was, like, I had no clue what this thing was whenever I used to hunt continuously. Because I didn't even believe in Bigfoot. So I didn't look for Bigfoot. Didn't look for signs of it.
Didn't even cross your mind.
No. Didn't even look for Sasquatch signs. I was hunting deer. I was looking for deer signs. And all these hunters, I love when these hunters say something like that. Because after I had my encounter, and I look back now at stuff that I had seen, it makes sense. I'm like, oh, you know. But these hunters, they'll say, well, I've hunted 20 to 30 years, I've never seen nothing. And I'll always look at them. I'll go, I guarantee it, though, if you're if you're truthful that you've hunted all these years, then I guarantee it you've come across stuff you couldn't explain out there in the woods. And they're like, yeah, I have. And they said, you know, you've got a point there. And I'm like, but you, it never crossed your mind, Bigfoot or anything else, did it? And they're like, no, that's because, you know, your mindset is they don't exist when you're, you know, it's a mockery unless you have somebody in your family or something that brings you up with it. But for the most part, if you were like me, you know, Bigfoot was fairy tale. They were, you know, just folklore. If it was real, it was out in the Himalayas or somewhere out west, you know.
It definitely wasn't in around here.
No. And I had my encounter. It was up in Indiana. I mean, you know, you don't even think of Bigfoot when you think of Indiana.
Well, my first encounter, which I didn't understand what it was when I was about 15 or 16, out coon hunting, me and my dad one night. That was my first encounter, and we didn't know what it was. But, you know, years later, of course, I figured out, you know, what it was.
Yeah, you look back. You look back, and that's how I am now. You know, we were up in that area up there in Indiana. Of course, it was out in the middle of nowhere. And you've got the Wabash River and the Tippecanoe River. They meet there, and we lived on that old creek, Sugar Creek, with hundreds of acres around us, you know, that nobody goes out in, does nothing with, and we live like right in the middle of it. And all these things, you know, like my little sister was chased out of the woods and the neighbor kid and stuff like that, and didn't ever imagine even it being a Bigfoot. They just said a monster, you know, and we thought, yeah, okay, sure, you know, something scared you, and that was it until, you know, I actually seen this thing. And it opens your eyes. You look back, man, and you're like, it explains a lot, you know, once you have an encounter with it. And then what you thought was scary or whatever becomes real, it makes sense. You start looking back, and you're like, wow, you know.
Well, by the time I had my first encounter, I was aware of Bigfoot. But, I, you know, when it happens, you don't think nothing. You don't automatically go to Bigfoot. You don't think, hey, that's a Bigfoot. You know, this thing here followed us and stalked us around side of a high wall where they, you know, where they strip the coal out and it leaves a mountain rock. And we could hear it going through the mountains, and our dogs were terrified. These are trained coon hounds we'd used for several years. They were barking at it, scared barking at it, and they would come and get in between our legs, scared, shaking, and we could hear this thing moving through the mountains. And we'd shine our lights up in there, and you couldn't see anything. You know, I took it that it was hiding or, it, you know, it blended in real well. And we finally got so scared, we actually left the area. And I didn't even think nothing about Bigfoot at the time. And my dad still didn't believe in any kind of Bigfoot up to just 2013 when he had one walk across the road in front of him. And but, you know, years later, of course, I figured out, hey, that was most likely a Bigfoot, even though we never seen it. But it followed us for a pretty good ways. And the dogs definitely didn't like it.
I noticed,
you know,
Arlen. Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, the one thing that really bothers me is when you know you have seen something like this, and there are reports, and those reports evaporate into thin air. Because I had a very close friend of mine who is a legitimate media member in Charleston. He called me up. Matt, you'll remember this, about 3 weeks ago. He called me up, and he told me about Bigfoot reports on Interstate 26 north of Somerville in Charleston. And he said, you are free to go ahead and break the story. And I did. And that story got clamped down unlike you've ever seen. I couldn't find out anything. He, as a member of the media and as a member of a major news organization, could not find out anything from the sheriff's department or anything. And you know, Thomas, you were talking about, you know, your dad seeing this and all this. But what really, it just irritates me. I mean, I know why they're doing it, you know. But it just irritates me that when you get a good lead on Bigfoot, and then all of a sudden it evaporates. It just goes into thin air. And you've got people that are so that are so credible. We're talking about CBS, Fox News, credible reporters calling me, and then I can't find out anything. And I ask them, they say, we don't know anything, John. And they're the ones that call me about it. I mean, that's what really irritates me, gentlemen. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Matt, to have interrupted you on what you were saying, but I couldn't help it. It just, Thomas, have you ever had that experience?
I had a witness who had called me. He had got my number, and he called me, and he told me this incredible story about when he actually shot a Bigfoot, and he goes into detail who all came to his house afterwards, and how they told him not to talk about it, and he waited several years before he never told anybody but his wife, and he waited several years and he contacted me. And he has it's a real emotional, when he's telling me, he becomes pretty emotional with it. And I heard from him once after that, and he told me he received a phone call again, and they told him that they'd known about our interview and that they would be in contact with him. And after that, I've not been able to get a hold of that man. And I don't know what happened. And he actually ran a business that should be doing very well at this point. And the email stopped working, telephone stopped working. So there's I have run into that where it seems like they're hushed up about it.
Yep. I'm sorry now, Matt, after all that 6 minutes of banter about the hushing up of Bigfoot, please continue. It just bothered me. And Matt, as my co-host, I hope you didn't mind me sharing that.
No, I'm glad. But they'll cover up everything. I was down there researching. I know Thomas is pretty familiar with him. Remember the skunk ape in Campbell County there in 2003?
Yes.
I was down there and went in there and I was doing some research, and they shut it down. They tried to say it was little spider monkey, and then these people come in. It was all over the news and all over the media. Then when this guy come in and he had a picture of the Florida skunk ape, and witnesses were saying that's what it was, and then all of a sudden it just wasn't on the news, no more reports, nobody covered it again. I'd went down there and the IGA down there had met up with this woman, and she had told me about how the sheriff of La Follette had told her they're a menace. They showed up at her house. They were a menace, that they were going to kill every single one of them, and for her to keep her animals inside. Supposedly they've been killing them out there. People that work for me that live in the La Follette area talking about helicopters flying around in that area. Just strange stuff. They shut it down. If you come up with any type of evidence, I would never call anybody with the wildlife conservation or DNR or police.
Don't call DNR. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. And I hate this because, I mean, in terms of my story, I was breaking that would have been the biggest deal of my life would be to break a major Bigfoot sighting. You know, that would have been, you know, it was going to be all over Facebook. It was going to be recorded that I put out. And Matt, this is when I'm talking about I'm talking about in representing you and I that do the Georgia Bigfoot Conference and the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. It was going to be a great thing. And it just vanished. And my friends do not want to talk about it. So, I mean, it just, you know, it was going to be a wonderful, opportunity to break a story that I would love to break, but, you know, it just didn't happen. So, you know, you just go with the flow and go with what happens. You do.
I've noticed too, I've been doing this, I'm like Thomas, I've been doing this for, let me see, 22 years, 23, and here lately, you know, a lot of strange things coming around. I believe I'm being monitored, watched. I've had too many weird phone calls. Basically, just kind of question what I do know and what I don't know. Everybody knows that my private messages, that could be just Facebook, but I think there's a little bit more to it. Keep getting me put in Facebook jail or whatever, but that's through private messaging. I believe that's something, you know, they've got certain people they keep an eye on, keep it under wraps somewhat.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever had any anything like that, Thomas?
Well, I know from years ago, during some UFO research, I got into an area where you were allowed to get into it, but it told you that if you get into this, it had a warning that popped up on the screen, said, "We will monitor you from here on out." And that's been years ago, and I can say, yeah, I do believe I've been monitored at times over the years.
I keep getting a lot of phone calls, messages saying, "I'm so-and-so from such-and-such, and we'd love to talk to you about, you know, your cryptid research." And basically, when the, if I do talk to these people, it's usually about what I know, and they pose as something else. I believe they're just fishing for information on me.
Could be.
So I believe, I definitely believe I'm being being watched or questioned. I was going to ask you, Thomas, okay, since I'm a transplant to this area, up here, right here at my house and stuff, have you had any report of around the, there's not a river or nothing like that, so I kind of, you know, don't really look into a whole lot because I believe these things travel through waterways and through cave systems, but up here around like the Sand Cave or Hensley Settlement or White Rock area, have you had any reports of anything on this mountain right here with the, in that area, like the White Rocks or Hensley?
That general area, not specifically right there, but near it, yes. I mean, if you'll look at our Bigfoot map, which is on our website, thecryptocrew.com, you can actually, it's an interactive map. You can scroll down and get closer into certain areas, and you, and they're all marked where the Bigfoot sightings are. And I've had several in that mountain range area. And that's a beautiful place over in there. And it's an ideal place for something like a Bigfoot, you know.
But it lacks the major waterway.
Yeah, it don't have a major waterway, but you got to think, how soon could they, I mean, how quick could they travel to a waterway? They move, like you said earlier, they move a lot faster and much more nimble than us through the mountains, so. And I'm like you, I think they do use cave systems, and what some people may not understand, in our area, we've got a lot of cave systems.
Yes.
They're just literally all over the place.
That, talking about your website there, this is off the topic of Bigfoot, but I noticed that you had that, story of a man getting lost in the cave, that Cujo's cave, overnight, and he got there was a ghost or whatever that was there and had talked to him that night. I'm kind of curious there of that Cujo's cave. I wonder, have you had any reports of a Bigfoot or any other thing besides ghost in that cave area?
Not in that cave, but I don't know. Have you ever took that tour where you go through the cave?
Oh, yeah. done it tons.
You know, it's got waterways through it, and when you go actually go through it, you're only going through a very, very small part of that cave. There's other parts of it that branch off that, you know, there's no public access to.
Right.
A friend of mine, Lucas Walter, he actually does some of the tours over there, works for the park system, and he has told me about some ghosts and things he's seen in there. But no Bigfoot that I'm aware of.
Or any other type of cryptid?
Only thing I've heard through there from them is from the is the ghost. But now, there's a cave. It was a cave in Morristown, Tennessee, that a lady contacted me, and she had actually saw a cryptid of some sort in there. And probably at some point or at some place, those caves probably connect somehow. So you never know.
True. Yeah, that cave, we used to, when I was little and we'd come down on vacation, every time we'd come down on vacation, we would always go to it, and you had to cross that busy highway there. And a lot of it's changed now since they put the tunnel in there. And they took all the lights out, and you have to go through there on flashlight now. You're not allowed to touch nothing. And before, you used to have to go through there, and they'd always tell the legend of Cujo. He had to rub his head, his bullet wounds. They had that formation there. And they won't even show you where that is now in the tours.
Now, the last time I went, they actually showed us where the formation was, or where they thought, you know, where it supposed to got trapped in there, and it made a human-like form. They showed us that, but that's been several years ago. Yeah, I never did go through that when I was a kid. We never did stop and go through that Cudjoe's Cavern. So just several years ago, me and my wife, my son went through it. We enjoyed it.
Well, see, we had used to go then, and I liked it a lot better then than I did now. But it was still nice going through it now, kind of reliving my childhood.
There's a couple places in there that's pretty tight to get in. I'm a pretty good-sized guy, and you have to be able to get down pretty low. But once you get through it, you know, you can stand up normal. But there's a couple tight squeezes for big people like me.
Yeah, there's
Thomas, yeah, real quick, tell us the story, because a lot of folks don't know this story about – and now what is the name of the entity?
Well, it was
I don't
a person. It's Cujo's Caverns is what the original book was called. I can't remember what they call it. Gap Cave now, I think, is what it's called. But the original story was if I remember correctly, it's been a long time since I read it. I think it was a slave that had ran away and hid in the cave system and became lost. And there's some rock formation in there. Supposedly he just kind of turned into stone. But now there's several reports of actual ghosts in there, some Civil War ghosts. If you've ever been in there, you can actually see where they've took the carbide lights and stuff and burnt dates and names into the top of the cavern. And there have been reports of seeing soldiers in there, which is kind of interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, they,
thank you. Just
I was going to say that story that I was talking about, this LMU student got locked in the cave overnight. And
yeah, I remember that one too.
Yeah, the slave had come to him, and he told him he couldn't hide. He said, "What are you doing in my cave?" He said, "There ain't no use in hiding. I can still see you or something." And then he sat down with him. And told him the story about his past. And then when come morning time and they opened up the cave, that kid or man, whatever he was, he come flying out of there because he was ready to get out of there, of course, by that time. And he had went somewhere in North Carolina and dug up some artifacts that slave had told him about. And
yeah, I remember that story too.
And it made sense because he would have no way of knowing about that stuff and where it was hidden if it wasn't for somebody had to tell him about it. That's what kind of gives that story a lot of credibility. Very
interesting. It's a fun little tour.
Yeah, it is.
It's a fun little historical tour to take if you're, you know, if you're in this area.
Yeah, that.
Well, gentlemen, this question to both of you: do you think this is a person that we could actually find now, an interview?
A what on that? Seen the ghost or the guy that was locked in?
Yeah. Well, the guy that was locked
Lucas,
in.
Well, I don't know about the guy that's locked in, but now Lucas Wilder would talk to you. I'm sure. He actually does a few of the CryptoCon things with us occasionally, and he puts on a pretty good presentation, a historical slash unusual events presentation.
Now, is he the redheaded boy that does the tour?
Yeah, okay, he's got the big beard.
I've talked to him quite a bit. He's telling me about how he keeps the tour. He'll pause for a minute if he sees one, and he'll talk to the people so they don't freak out, because he'll see like a Confederate soldier standing in the way, and he'll stop the tour and he'll describe something until the apparition disappears, and then he'll bring the tour through so people don't freak out if they see it. He told me several stories where he's come across that. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. That's a good point.
We ought to all three, you know, I'd love for the three of us to get together with him and talk, and maybe the three of us and him could do a Bigfoot and Company or a Scary Cast, and let him, if he would be willing, you know. I'm sorry, it's terrible. We just talk about people on the podcast like they're here. But, you know, if we could get him, I would love for the three of us. Thomas, Matt, would you guys like to interview him with me and here on Scary, maybe on the Thursday night Scary Cast? Would you like to do that?
Oh, yeah, I can. I'll try and, if I can think of it, I'll try and go down there and talk to him one morning this
week.
Yeah,
Lucas is a good guy.
All right, well, good. Well, then Thomas, I'll invite you and Matt and with me, and we'll hit him up on a Scary Cast on a Thursday night at 11 p.m. Worldwide, and I think people will enjoy it. So thank you. All right. Please continue, gentlemen. Sorry I couldn't resist that. This is just old home week here. You know, we just got people we love here, so you know. You know, right, Thomas and Matt, we just do whatever we have to do to make this great tradition of Bigfoot and what people call paranormal, which is very real, actually. It just irritates me, but anyway, all right, I'll shut up and let the two Bigfoot dudes keep talking.
Well, I mean, there's a lot more than just Bigfoot. There's a lot more than just Bigfoot. Bigfoot with a lot, so
mm-hmm.
A whole lot.
They all
kind of
go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Well, it
now,
does.
What are your theories, Thomas, on the, have you ever seen any lights or anything like that associated with Bigfoot?
Well, I'm not necessarily associated with Bigfoot, but that was my first probably interest in weird stuff was UFOs, because when I was young, I'm talking about probably 8-10 year old, I'd seen some unusual lights in the sky, and that was probably my first interest in weird stuff. And then from that, it went to ghosts, and then eventually it got into Bigfoot. But I've never seen any unusual lights that I thought was associated with Bigfoot. I know a lot of times there seems to be a correlation between UFO sightings and Bigfoot sightings, that they're in the same area, but that could possibly be due to what's under the ground there, what kind of rock formations are in there, and things like that.
Yeah, that produced like different gases and.
Well, that
so
could be
on,
a resource there that they both use.
Oh well, yeah, I didn't think about that. That's a good point. See, I don't know a whole lot about the whole UFO stuff. That's why on Mountain Empire, I brought Angelina in. She's the director of MUFON, and she gets tons of reports of UFO, and a lot of them are Bigfoot-related, and she tries to cover and macro the the big or the UFO stuff related. She's our expert on that. But it's just been hard for me to follow UFOs because you don't know what the military's testing. You can't,
exactly.
You know, and they're not going to admit to anything. So it's
well,
hard for me.
It's much more difficult. It's much more difficult
yeah.
now to distinguish between what's actually a UFO and what is something that maybe belong to us, you know, military-wise, because technology is
yeah.
advanced. But, you know, you go back years ago, and people were seeing this stuff, and we didn't have those kind of capabilities. A few years ago, I saw something that I couldn't explain. I was actually out Bigfoot hunting is what I was doing. I was looking for tracks. And as I was coming home, I seen this. It almost looked like a ball in the sky, a silver ball. And I was trying to stop my four-wheeler and get my camera and stuff out, but, of course, I didn't want to take my eyes off of it. And as it made a kind of a left turn, or actually, sorry, a right turn, it became transparent. It looked like a blow bubble, like if you blow bubbles. It looked like that, and then it was completely gone. You couldn't see it at all. And I don't know of any technology that we have, military-wise, that can do that. And this was a couple years ago.
Could you tell about the size of it? Could you give an estimate?
Well, I was on top of the mountain, and it was. I wouldn't know exactly how big it was, but it didn't appear to be extremely large or anything like that. From my perspective, you know, of course it wasn't no big giant mothership or nothing like that, but it was definitely metallic, silverish, no sound, no kind of vapor trail, and as it turned, it looked like you blew a bubble, you know, because you can see the outer edge, but the middle's kind of hazy like or whatever. I could still see through it. And then it totally disappeared. And I watched it probably for, gosh, I don't know, probably well over a minute. Because my four-wheeler was on a hill and the brakes are not real good on it. So I was trying to get it stopped and try to get my camera out of the back, and it was just super difficult. And I didn't want to look away in case I, you know, would miss something. And I guess that's the closest thing I've had to being Bigfoot related and UFO related. I was out Bigfoot hunting and seen a UFO.
Well, that brings me into makes me think of the topic. What's your opinion on cloaking? You've heard all these reports of Bigfoot cloaking. What's your opinion?
I don't like the term cloaking. I think the term cloaking causes a negative connotation to go along with it. I personally do not believe they can actually turn invisible. I would say, if anything, it has to do more with their hair. Maybe their hair is more translucent than what we understand, and it picks up the colors and blends in. But as far as cloaking and mind speak and all that, I've never experienced any of that.
Okay, that's same with me. But, like you said, the hair might camouflage it in a little better. I'm colorblind, so it's hard for me anyhow to determine, especially when it starts getting dusk. It's really hard to make out things.
Predominantly here in our area, most of the reports I get here in our area are of black Bigfoot. The ones I've seen personally was dark as a chunk of coal. But I've also taken in some reports of some brown and brownish red ones, and actually taken in a few reports of white ones in this general area.
Well, what would your explain some of your sightings that you've seen with Bigfoot?
Well, I watched a very large Bigfoot. It was on a lightly snowy day. Just a little skip of snow on the ground. It might have been flurrying a little bit. And I'd watched a Bigfoot step between two trees. I think it's a red oak, and I'm not sure what the other tree is. And it stepped in between these two trees. And I didn't realize how big it was. I could tell it was large. I seen its whole back, its hips. I seen its leg, its calf muscles as it walked through. And this is less than probably There's nothing that's obstructing my view. This is probably roughly 75, 80 yards away. And I would say this Bigfoot was probably around 9 to 10 foot tall. And it was actually right here where I live at. But what is interesting about it is that in 2013, I got a neighbor who walks the road for exercise. Sometimes he goes in the morning, sometimes he goes in the evening. We had seen a Bigfoot cross the road right here below my house less than a quarter of a mile. And he came and told me about an hour later. I actually went and investigated right where he was talking about. And I talked to some people who live nearby, and they kept their dog food out in one of those snap containers like you buy at Walmart, a tub. And they told me they'd seen something black getting in the tub and getting the dog food. But they thought it was probably just a bear. Well, as I investigated that, I actually found some stick formations where they made the giant X's and things like that. But I never could actually find any track because it was real hard. It's next to a creek bed. Well, fast forward a little bit. I had some neighbors here living beside me. They both sadly passed away now. And at the time, I did some computer repair. Well, one of them come down and brought me his computer to work on. And he told me, he says, there's something coming behind the house, and I don't think it's a bear. I said, well, do you think it could be maybe a Bigfoot? He said, well, I just don't think it's a bear. It's just too big. Well, come to find out, I went up there and looked around. I actually found tracks and everything in behind his house. But they had an old dog there, old bird dog. It didn't hardly have any teeth. It was fed well, but it seemed like it was real skinny. And I believe that Bigfoot was coming and taking that dog's food. Well, this is all within maybe a quarter mile circle, all this is. And you fast forward maybe just another year above that, before that, or after that, rather. And that's when I saw this big one step through these trees right here in front of my house. And my theory is that my neighbor, who at the time he would put out a lot of scraps for animals, and I think that Bigfoot was coming down there and eating those scraps. Because not long after that, the old dog died. And that dog food, it was no longer there. So I think it actually moved over to the next neighbor's house and started eating some of these scraps he was throwing out. And that's how come I seen it.
Now, I've heard a lot of reports that they eat dog food. Okay, now, here's another question. I've been pretty close to a bear. My sense of smell ain't as good as it used to be, especially since sinus issues. But I've never smelled a bear. I have smelled a Bigfoot, and it's nasty. I've heard a lot of people say, well, if there's a smell, then you didn't have an encounter. And I know that's complete BS, complete total BS, because every time, I could tell that one that I encountered was around was because of the smell. Smelled it before it even made a sound or anything, the odor in the air. But I've come up on bears, and I've tracked them. They've been in trees. I've been within just a few feet of them, but I've never smelled a bear. Have you ever smelled? Because a lot of people say, oh, that's just a bear you're smelling. But I've never smelled a bear.
Well, I ginseng a lot. As ginseng season is in, I actually ginseng a lot. And this past year, I was really too close to my mama bear and three cubs. I was down digging ginseng. I stood up, and I heard something come through the woods, and she ran right on me within just a few feet, which was kind of scary. But I have smelled a bear before, but it was only after it had been light. It was real moist of the morning. And they do kind of stink. But now, as far as Bigfoot, I've never been around a real strong stench of a Bigfoot. I have smelled things that I didn't recognize that I know was probably not a bear, but it wasn't strong enough for me to say, hey, I think this might be a Bigfoot. It was very, very, just a very light, bad smell. But I've taken in reports where people have really smelled a Bigfoot strongly, and then I've took in a bunch more where they didn't smell anything. So I don't know. There's some kind of varying factor there that maybe we haven't figured out completely yet on why some of them stink and some of them don't.
But up there, anytime it was around, there was an odor, and it was strong. It come through the air. I could smell it. But of course, it's flat up there, so you got stronger wind. It's not like here in the mountains, you know, you've got all these, the wind will cut through certain ways and stuff. It may not, you know, the wind chill up there is a lot worse than what is here. You get that lake effect stuff up there coming from Lake Michigan and stuff, but with that strong wind and stuff and it being flat, could have been a factor. But anytime, I base a lot of my research on the fact that I know because of what I've encountered. And, but with the smell, I always knew that it was around because of the smell. But I've been within feet also of a bear, but I didn't smell the bear.
If that's me, I've been close to bears and not smelled them as well. I got one that mama bear that day. I didn't smell anything that day. Now, we looked at each other right in the eyeball.
Yeah, that's
but
that's
I don't have a real good sense of smell. I suffer real bad from allergies, so my sense of smell is not very good most of the time. So that could be a factor for me.
See, that could be a factor for me now because I never had sinus problems until I moved down here. But
I didn't have any until when I turned 30. When I turned 30, I started having all kinds of allergy problems, and it kept on going for years now.
I think there's something for me that grows on the other side of the Ohio River because anytime I come down here on vacation, I'd always have problems. And then whenever I moved down here, I got my first sinus infection within the first month and a half. Yeah. But,
them are fun.
Hell yeah. But like you said,
I did something else too. You talked about something else. You talked about some of them stinking, you know, some of them stinking, some of them not. I also got a report of here. This happened about maybe 2 miles up the road from where I'm at. The same guy that I was telling you about walking, he used to live up that way, and he'd walk the railroad tracks. And he ran into one that was in the creek. He said he didn't know what it was doing. It was just in the creek splashing around. So I wonder if that has anything to do with it, that whether they get into water or not.
That's a good possibility because I lived on the creek. The creek was right there. I'd hunt off the creek bank, and when I had my encounter where we lived on that creek, I'd use a deer trail that went down into the cattails and down into the creek there, and that whole area was nothing, you know, but wet water, you know. It was, the creek was definitely there, and that could be a possibility. It could be a strong possibility.
And then sometimes I wonder if it's something that they can control to some degree. You know, several animals give off a stench when they feel threatened or uneasy or whatever. We know, like, copperheads give off a smell and stuff like that. I wonder if it's something that maybe it's like that that happens. You know, just a lot of questions.
Yeah, pheromone. Yeah, it could be a pheromone that they're releasing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd smelled it even... We'd always smell something, and we'd hear the scream and the call, but we never knew what it was until I actually had my encounter and I'd seen it. But it was never aggressive except for that one day. But the smell was always associated with it, but it could be, like you said, with the creek or whatever, being wet.
Could possibly be have something to do with a diet or anything that they have at certain times of the year or anything. It's just hard to say.
But I have never smelled a bear, like I said. I've been up on them, tracked them to the tree they've been in. They've come down on the tree on me. I've had to tell my daughter to step back. He was right there on the heels with me. And
well, you know, some of that could also have to do with the breeding season or anything. Which is just a lot of questions on that we don't understand.
That's very true. Very true. I'm kind of curious, though, about the smell. It had me wondering. I've heard some people and researchers and stuff talk about, well, they say there was a smell, then I know they ain't telling the truth or something. I was like, what? I start laughing at them. I'm like, you're not. You know, I know for
well,
a fact
that's like
that.
Well, that's like the same people who disregard all stick formations as being natural. They've just not done enough research.
See, I've done, I think a lot of tree structures and stuff are 90% natural, but you can tell the difference between something that has been used, something with a thumb, a hand that has turned or twisted. And a lot of people, they don't know how to identify it. A lot of it is misidentification.
Right.
And they'll put a picture up of
it. Yeah, I've seen people put pictures up of deadfall and claim it's Bigfoot. I worked in the log woods, too, and I've seen a lot of trees do a lot of weird stuff. When you cut them down, they knock into a bunch of other trees that does some weird stuff. But I found numerous structures. If you get into a real active Bigfoot area, it won't take you long. You'll understand that, yeah, they definitely do stuff with sticks. I found stuff, and I found tracks right beside the structures, and be there one day, and then you go back 3 days later, and there's nothing there. There's nothing there at first, and you go back 3 days later, and there's a formation. And, you know, it's a lot of times it's tree limbs that's not right there close by. It's like they brought them from somewhere else.
Right. The tree structure stuff, a lot of that is you have to know what you're looking at. A lot of people, like I said, they just anything they.
Every dark spot's a Bigfoot.
Yeah, every dark spot's a Bigfoot. All these shadows, every tree bent, every tree twist, stuff like that is Bigfoot. But
I think a lot of that's just a lack of experience.
That's true. And a lot of them, they want everything to be Bigfoot so bad that it just consumes them and they.
It's Bigfoot,
you know.
It sure does.
Or maybe it's just wishful thinking, you know.
Well, it's a little bit frustrating because I put in a lot of time in the mountains and a lot of hard climbing, and then you got somebody that puts up a shadow, a picture of a shadow, and they'll fight you over it being a Bigfoot. No, it's a shadow, buddy.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's the whole thing. Like with me, whenever I first had my encounter, it made me. First thing I started doing was I took wildlife conservation courses. I took tracking courses. I had to weed out everything, and that's your big key when you're out in the woods. You have got to know the wilderness and its surroundings so you can identify what is what out there. And a lot of people.
I get a lot of questions from people who are maybe wanting to get into Bigfooting, and I tell them, well, you need to learn the animals that are in your area. You need to learn what all kinds they are, their tracks, and things like that. You got to know what's in your area to rule out, you know, if you do see something or find something, you know, hey, well, this is a track of a bear. But a lot of times people don't do that. They don't educate themselves about what's in their area.
Yep, I agree. That's like a lot of people talking about, well, black bears don't hibernate around here. They don't. And black bears in general don't hibernate, but in late January to February, they do go into a sleep mode like. And late January, early February is when they're giving birth to their little ones.
Correct.
Maybe on a hot day. In that time frame or something, you might get a bear come out of sleep and kind of wander around. But for the most part, though, into January, into February, they're usually denned up somewhere. They're not that active at all. And a lot of people are like, well, they don't even have. They do. I don't consider it hibernation. It's just where they're denning up, but they're not that active.
A lot of it depends on the temperatures.
Exactly.
If it stays warm for several days, they're coming. They're coming out if it stays warm for several days. They're going to come out.
Yep.
But I'm like you. Some people think in September they go into the cave and they don't come back out to spring. No, it's not true.
Exactly. Exactly. It's only just a short time. It's usually right around whenever, right around when the mothers are giving birth, and it's usually about January into early February is when they're leaves out.
They're actually out right now. I know they're out right now because we got one here. It's coming in front of my house. He got down in the garbage just a couple of days ago.
Yeah,
but before that, he was somewhere else.
I was getting ready to say, yeah, they should be out by now anyhow, for sure.
Yeah, they're stirring around a little bit now. But, you know, right now there's not much food source for them, so they have to kind of get into garbage if they're, you know, around houses. They're going to get into garbage if they can.
Exactly, yep. Any way they can find food, I mean. It'd be like a food.
This one here running around looks like a young one.
I don't know if you've seen that that picture, that one where I did a lot of research up around Norton area too. Had that big 794-pound bear hit by a car, the state record in Virginia.
Yeah, that's a big
fall.
One for this area.
Yeah, that was state record in Virginia. That thing was humongous. And I researching those woods, you know, I've seen lots of bear tracks and stuff all through there. Now, it kind of makes me, I'm looking for, I'm sure it's got some offspring that's probably about the same size.
Well, now, last year, I went out ginseng in 2 days in a row. 2 days in a row, I think. It might have been 2 out of 3 days. And in those 2 days, I seen 9 bear in 2 days. And they tell us we only got a very small population around here, but I just don't match up with what we're seeing.
No, there's a lot. Actually, the bear population is really getting, it's really growing. I don't know if you've seen those pictures I put from Middlesboro. They had one running through the Big Lots parking lot.
That's in our county. That is actually in our county, and they estimate we only have, I think, 200 or 300 bears in the whole county. And that just, there's no way we got more than that.
I think there was probably 5 or 6 right there at the dumpster at Fondy Mountain there in Bell County.
Fondy's there.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a fun little trip going across through there if it's snowy.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But where you're at and where I'm at is prime real estate for Bigfoot to stay. I mean, we got plenty of food sources. We got plenty of area where there's no people, plenty of water sources, plenty of caves. So we're in a prime location.
That is true. That's true. I usually general like around rivers and lakes and streams, but that's why I was kind of curious about up here, because there's not a major river or anything up here around the sand cave and stuff. I mean, there's springs like the waterfall that comes off the sand cave there, but
right.
You know, little streams, stuff like that, but no major, you know, big fish.
That's a pretty area up in there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely pretty. I enjoy going up in there.
And there's, once you get off the actual, the road and stuff, there's, you go a pretty long ways. You can't find, there's nothing but mountains.
Yep. Yeah, there is. There definitely is. Dr. John, you still, see, what is it? Is it May? I believe Dr. John, he'll be coming around this area here. May, we'll have to show him around some of the area.
Definitely.
They've got a bunch of reports though, whenever I was over there in Harlan. Seemed like kind of a hotbed over there for Bigfoot sightings.
There's several locations that seem to be pretty active, have sightings pretty often. I'm sure you run into it too. I get witnesses who will tell me the what they saw, but they don't want to go, want it published. They don't want nobody else to know. don't use my name, don't tell nobody, I'll tell you, but don't you tell nobody else. I mean, I run into that quite often. I'm pretty sure I'd say you do too, don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's why I love, like, these conferences and stuff that I do. I love these conferences just for the major fact that people come up to me, witnesses, and they get it off their chest, what they've seen. And these are, you know, like I said, pharmacists, lawyers. I mean, they're smart people. They're highly intelligent. They know they've seen something, but they don't want to tell people because of fear of ridicule. And Dr. John's come across quite a few of them, too. They'll come up to him and tell him stories that they normally won't tell other people. But at these conferences, they come and they'll seek you out and they'll tell you their story. And I love seeing the relief that they get because I've been there. You know, you're looking at something that's not supposed to exist. And like I said, if you don't know anything about it or weren't involved in it and you see something like that, I mean, it gives you a trauma, you know. You're like, what in the world? And that's why I love these conferences. I love them.
Well, my dad. My dad never believed in Bigfoot or anything like that. And actually, over the years, he kind of poked a little fun at me about it because I researched Bigfoot. But then that morning, that one walked across in front of him at about 30 feet in front of his truck, his car. Out of that, he believed, you know. But he waited 5 days to come and tell me about that. And I asked him, I said, buddy, why did you wait so long to come and tell me? He said, well, to be honest, I kind of felt bad because I'd made fun of you over the years. But he took me to the area. I was able to get in there and find tracks. I found a track way of over 30 tracks. That's where the game cam picture came from. I mean, I've had a lot of, in that general area, I've had a lot of luck researching where he had that sighting at. And in my opinion, the reason he had actually seen it walk across the road came out, it was an old mountain road, and it came out to like a T. Well, to the right, you couldn't see. You had to kind of ease your car up and turn it to the right to make sure nothing wasn't coming, and then turn back to the left. And that my opinion is that Bigfoot seen him turn to the right, you know, so he could see, and he thought it was going to the right, so he'd come across the road. But he actually whipped around to the left, and there it was right in the road on him.
Oh, my. That's another thing, too. I always look at, like, a deer running across the road, or they come running out of the field. I look at the deer, and then I look to see what caused them to run out, see if there's anything behind them.
Yeah.
What spooked them, you know.
I had one run in my yard a few years ago. He come right off this mountain where I was telling you I had where I had my siding, and these other neighbors lived, had the stuff come behind their house. It come right off of that and jumped into my yard and run into the back. It had been running so long its nose was bleeding. It was bleeding. It was aspirating out of its nose and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And there was no dogs, no coyotes or nothing come chasing it. I don't know what was after it. We set a bucket of water out there. I actually put videos up on it on my Facebook. Gosh, it's been 4 or 5 years ago, I guess. We actually set some water out there for it and left the back gate open to the fence. And it eventually, when it got dark, it eased on out of my yard. But it had ran to, it was bleeding out of its nose and mouth.
Oh, my goodness.
Definitely.
Well, tell you what, gentlemen, we have about reached the end of Bigfoot and Company for this week. Thomas, we've had such a good conversation with you. Could we get you back in 2 or 3 weeks to continue what we're doing?
Very possible, yeah.
Okay, great. I'll check with you on the date. Matt, now I'm sorry, you're stuck. You're going to be here next week, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's penciled in for eternity.
He's penciled in for – hey, that's a great phrase. I like that, Thomas. Yep, we got about 45 seconds left. I want to say thank you to both of you for being here on Bigfoot and Company. This has been a lot of fun. Sorry we have to leave, but we'll get you back soon, Thomas. We'll see you at a conference. And, Matt, thank you very much. Just want to remind everybody, the most important thing in my life, coming up, Georgia Bigfoot Conference, April 27th, Clayton, Georgia. Thanks a lot to everybody, and we'll see you soon on Bigfoot and Company. Bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Thanks.